specific interventions for the subjects, for business studies. We had them focusing on business environments and business operations. Those were the topics. And then maybe something that we just need to foreground also as a special focus was something that had been left out in the past, focus on languages, the home languages in particular. I'm sure members will take note of the fact that in almost every province, we will just try to highlight how each of the provinces have now started focusing on home languages. So the Free State, being the home of Sesotho, also had Sesotho focused in that case. And then there was support, as we indicated, for special schools. So the four special schools in the province is also really provided with support, as may be indicated in this case. And then there's direct letter support, resource provisioning provided, especially for those schools that have letters taking sign language. The interventions, support measures for teachers, for the Free State, as we indicated, this is consistent. There's content training workshop and then marking guideline discussions in this case, the objectives of which were to assist teachers with content knowledge and to ensure that teachers have enough content knowledge, saying that they might not have been in constant practice themselves. It was strengthening, their content mastery and so on and so forth. And this is the scope indicates the date as well as the region. I would like to call the members' attention to the fact that the last column indicates the reach. GP has the successful SIP program that is their largest support program. And this has, different forms of digital content in the form of e-books and then multimedia in the form of digital lessons. And in the next slide, we indicate, the support measures that were indicated for learners or that were provided for learners. There were brochures, highlighting to the learners the common errors and misconceptions. And as we indicated, the SIP, as well as specific focus for teacher development, for schools that performed below 60% in mathematics. Now, in the case of GP, the focus was on English FAL, which, as we all know, is taken by the majority of the learners and is also our law. So the focus in their support measures was on English as a language. Next, focus on special schools. We indicate also, the measures which Gauteng province took to ensure that learners are supported. And if I could just take members to the fourth bullet, learners were supported in how to calm down so that they can get ready, they can take their exams, in a better prepared notion than, just rushing through the emotions and not being able to give their best. So, they were taken then through exercises to calm down, just the psychosocial support that enables them to calm down. And also class assistants were on standby to support learners who needed physical support. We're taking a rest break. And the next slide speaks to teacher interventions. And again, we had a variety of support measures as indicated. And just I've indicated before in the previous slide, the focus is on the reach. We can say that whatever support measures were intended, at least we're able to reach more than 54% of the intended target. Israel also conducted extra classes, as we indicated, and then they also conducted quarterly common tests for schools that performed below 75. Take note, the focus is on schools that obtained below 75. As we go on with the year, we progress. Provinces are lifting their benchmark. The benchmark of any performance below 70%, as you know, needing focus is really what provinces led by the DBK have gone into now. The renovation materials through Step Ahead and learner support materials, you know, for the learners. And then the next slide, we speak to you know, the support, the focus support in life sciences. There was focus on the DNI, code of life, and all of those other content areas that I mentioned again. The focus on the language, the biggest language offered in the province in this case is Zulu. The Saturday and winter classes that were focusing on the subject. The support for special schools, textbooks in Braille were made available, and then a range of assistive devices were made available as well as to schools. And support, you know, for the schools offering SASL were monitored with regard to the SBA. The next slide speaks to the teacher support measures. And again, as we indicated, quite a number of them that in this place we just lifted for accounting and ESL. And again, our target audience is captured. And as we indicated, that's at least more than 55%, you know, for accounting in March and June, and 100% of the intended target in ESL. Limpopo, over and above the common areas that we have mentioned of extra classes, they have an extended contact time through morning afternoon lessons. And they also provided, you know, common media assessments. And importantly, the last point made there, camps for learners at risk and high flyers. So that differentiation where we have learners of different cognitive levels addressed differently and supported differently is coming through. And this is the support that's provided for physical sciences, the Saturday classes and MSD camps for high flyers. And then geography, we had GIS exhibition, subject clinics and subject festivals. And the next slide speaks to you know, the support for special schools. The 11 special schools in the province, and there was support from Second Chance as well, you know, made available or infused in supporting these special school programs. And then learners are also being subjected to external assessment in all the attempts. And in the next slide, we're looking at teacher support measures as indicated. And again, we can see, other than in January and May, where the uptake was a bit low, you know, particularly in geography, we do see that there's been a serious reach, at least for business studies. There was a serious reach for business studies at 90% of the subject cohort reached. And the next province is Mpumalanga, which also provides radio lessons and online presentations, amongst others, and assessment supporting and including exemplar papers. In other words, we all the efforts made to provide standardized assessment. And then for agricultural sciences, those were the aspects that were addressed. And for history, you know, those were, again, the aspects that were addressed. The next province, the further support that was provided in Mpumalanga for the special schools in particular, the 18 of them with only one offering grade 12, was the special subject, specialist visited in the schools to provide individualized attentions. And then the short-term strategy, the province agreeing to recruit teachers with relevant skills, or providing those relevant skills for the learners. And then there's ongoing training on accredited FASL. Then for teacher support measures, content training for accounting, that's an example we have cited here. But this was between February and June. And then you could see the focus there was all the teachers performing below 80% in the subject. And the uptake is indicated. And these were the letter support interventions for the Northwest. And these were just examples, as we indicated. The podcast lessons, as we can say, these are also cutting across, like your vacation classes. And then the quarterly moderation of school-based assessment to ensure that there are no rejections of the SBA marks. And then the next slide. The next slide speaks to the support that was provided in economics, and we do indicate there what the focus were and what were the issues that were brought up. And again, Setswana being the biggest language offered, received attention as well. And these, we started there, the activities that were provided, by the province to support Setswana. The next slide speaks to teacher interventions, support measures rather, and we outline also who the targets were and the reach, again, as members can see, above 50% in both instances. The next slide speaks to the support that's been provided in the Northern Cape. And the common assessment, again, these are coming in very, common across the provinces, as well as lock-in sessions and Saturday classes. Lock-in sessions are those sessions in which learners are just kept and, going on for a given period so that at least, they provide you more support on an ongoing and prolonged base rather than in bits and pieces. And this also included, Saturday classes. And these are the examples of what the focus areas were and support, direct support were, for geography and for math slates. Now, on the next slide, we look at support, for special schools. And, the Second Chance program is really been used as our start-off point, to provide support for these learners, because all of those material that we can access that we developed for the Second Chance, as well as question papers and memoranda that were set and converted to Braille, and there's absolute an extensive support from the inclusive habitat. And the last province, the Western Cape. We saw there, the support they had provided from telematics booklets in grade 12, online lessons, as well as providing calculators to quintiles 1 to 3 schools. Now, on the next slide, we're looking at the direct support that was provided for Maths Lit as well as for Afrikaans. Again, the focus on the language, the main language that's offered in the progress in the province. So that's the intervention that was provided by the Western Cape. The next slide provides the substantive support measures that were indicated as well for the teachers, and the focus in this case was your novice teachers, as well as teachers from the underperforming schools. And we can see the uptake again, or rather the reach, that the province succeeded in developing. Then on the next slide, we look at, going forward, actually, this slide going forward. We're now shifting from what the provinces were doing and looking at the direct support that was conducted by the DBE. Now, this started from reworking the annual teaching plans and mediating them through subject committee meetings, just ensuring that everybody knows what's expected, and that there was reintroduction of the June examinations so that learners can be prepared, for the end of the year exams. Remember, the issue we made as the challenge when we started was that learners were not exposed to standardized assessment. So this reintroduction of the June examinations, which subsequently led to learners being better prepared for the preparatory, as well as the end of the year examinations, was a sought after and a call actually that also came from provinces. Diagnostic reports are crafted and mediated, and the study guides have also been developed. And we do indicate, we can go to the next slide, Dr. Collier. We do indicate also in the next slide, the number of study guides that were provided. We will get that certificate. Just go to the next. That's right. Can you just hold on to that, Dr. Collier? The study guides, the precedent slide, please. Just want to make one point there. The study guides, the literature study guides. Now the next one. Slide 45. Right. The study guides for literature. Just call the honourable member's attention that there was a change in literature texts for poetry and short stories. Poetry for both FOWL and home language, and then short stories only for FOWL, first edition languages. So there was literature study guides that were developed, so that learners can be prepared to take those two texts. And then the DBE is also working closely with partners in what's called the remote and digital learning. And the remote and digital learning, offers curriculum and psychosocial support programs through various programs and platforms. And we will now talk to those. These are the collaborators of the remote digital learning project. And the focus, those Tswelo Pele, Mozambique Twigs, and, those focus on different areas. Tswelo Pele, mainly R to 11, and then Mozambique Twigs mainly focuses on grade 12. Now, the purpose of this intervention, the Tswelo Pele and Mozambique Twigs, is to ensure that learners catch up on curriculum learning, and then it provides revision and it enables care and support as well as prepare learners for exams. And then teachers and parents are also provided, with support so that they can be able to support learners as well. Now, this program runs consistently. And it also, the two programs, they run consistently, and they also run during the holidays. We can go to the next slide, Dr. Poria. The next slide also indicates, we can go to the next slide. Great. We did indicate that there were selected grades from grade R to 12, and then the core subjects, which mainly are your high enrollment subjects. We have provided the list there, the maths, natural and life sciences, and physical sciences. And remember, we did say Tswelo Pele focuses from grade R to 11, whilst Mozambique Twigs focuses on 12 mainly. So those are the subjects, as you can see. You have your natural life sciences, natural sciences, and life sciences, which, as we indicated, is an accommodation for your all the grades from R to 12. And the holiday programs target teachers, learners, and parents, and then we use a multiple number of platforms, which include television, radio, audios, the internet, and applications, various applications. Right. The advocacy includes, all forms of platforms that we can to inform the society and the community in general about these various support measures that are available for learners. And the next slide. We provide examples of those, platforms that we use, to upload content, as well as, to have to enable learners to access the support that's been provided. And the next slide. These are again your platforms, your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and WhatsApp, as measures that are used to access the learners. And then the next slide, we also cite the collaborators and partners of these RDL, as we have indicated. Now, something that is done differently in this case with particularly the RDL, that brings about the change, is that we measure performance. We're looking at how well all of these support measures have had an impact on the learners. So that's that against what we intended. We can't really say we're there yet, as I think honorable members will see in our presentation, because we can only tell about how far we have gone making contact with the intended audience, but the impact we haven't been able to assess that. We will get to that. But we're looking at program implementation data, and then we provide platform analytics as in the impact, as well as implementing the monitoring, implementation of monitoring of data as well. In other words, how do we monitor the data that we have gathered? So this is what the platform analytics will look like, looking at 2023 January to April. On the next slide, Dr. Poya? Right. This, maybe just given the context, the preceding slide is will be. Can we go to the preceding slide? Right. We want to, in this case, just provide a weighted definition so that members can know what we mean by a platform in this case, what are multiple platforms, as well as what are currently the challenges and limitations. As I indicated, our success in reaching out or establishing the impact, that is what's spoken about in the challenges. But a platform, in this context, means a digital or non-digital space from which learning resources can be accessed, as well as used by learners and teachers or whoever the target audience will be. So the multiple platforms will be those various, access points to the learning resources. In other words, platform is just generic, whereas multiple platforms will mean whether, for instance, that's digital or that's, online, that's print, and so on and so forth. Now, the challenges in this case is that we can only measure the extent of the reach, I think I implied that also, and not the nature and the extent of learning with the resources available on the platform. This is just the one area that we just need to strengthen. Education and television is a platform. In this case, the educational television as a platform referring to all the material or access to support that can be accessed via education and television. This is what we'll be looking at here. This is what we're assessing. On the next slide, the risk in this case, we're referring to the number of learners or the number of viewers per program, you know, that had access to the program that's broadcast. And now there is an average daily reach as well as a cumulative viewership. Part of the reach speaks to the viewers per program. The average daily reach refers to that, you know, the average number of times in which the platform was accessed, whereas the cumulative monthly viewership refers to an accumulation of the average of viewership throughout the month. Now, much as I think in the next slide we indicate how successful we've been in that, again, the disclaimer is we can talk about the numbers, but we can talk about the reach, but not the impact. And here we are, I'm sure the numbers, as you can see, honorable members, all beyond a million, tell that at least there is quite a reasonable number that's been accessed. And you can tell that quite a number of viewers are accessing this material. Then YouTube as a digital platform, you know, in the next slide, we also indicate what the reach is in this case. Views and subscribers, views in this case referring to the number of times the videos were viewed, and then subscribers as in the number of subscriptions, you know, that the YouTube channel has. Again, the amount of time as well as that of learning, you know, is not what we're able to provide in this case. Those are the areas, as I indicated, that needs to be, you know, the area that needs to be strengthened. And on the next slide, we're looking at views versus subscription. You can see that we have high numbers of viewers, but very little on subscribers. So this is an area that we need to develop, honorable chair, you know, that we have more subscribers, you know, all the time. But as for the views, as for accessing the platform, at least the numbers are satisfactory. Then was the trick. Again, in this case, you can see the views are satisfactory. The issue that we have, the numbers that are really not what we hope for, that of subscriptions. And something that's very interesting, you know, maybe just going back to some of the common programs that we mentioned. Remember that we did mention that the vacation classes consistent support measure. Honorable members will realize that when it approaches winter school, in the period of winter school, which is post exams, June exams, you know, the viewership drops, which then tells us that the impact of our winter school support programs is appreciated by the learners. So there's more focus on the work that's done during the winter school program than accessing this material. Then the next slide, the mobile apps. This is just one of those platforms, at least, that have a better measure of the impact, and I'll explain why I say that. This is a platform that at least is current, that's real time. You know, the chat users, you know, the participants who use the chat platform, and the as I indicated, with an online tutor offering. That's what I meant by, you know, it happening real time. And then on the next slide, we're looking at the number of users. And as may be seen, you know, the numbers are what we have there, directly indicated. And then the WhatsApp line, in their interactive manner, suggests that you know, there's direct communication, there's direct inquiry from the learner, from the tutor, and there's that exchange, which means it's real time, it's happening as and when you know, the information is required. And on the next slide, we're looking at you know, the reach as well, you know, for the metric. The first one, the previous slide was the reach for your R to 12, to 11, and then was the metric, obviously that will be for your grade 12. Then it again tells with the drop in numbers during the winter school time that, you know, focus is really on the winter school. On the next slide, again, those are the collaborators in all of these programs, as we have indicated. And I would like us to go to the next slide, please, Isaac. Going back to the mobile app, something that we've not been able to do with the other platforms, at least can be done with is the mobile app. Because with the mobile app, we can quantify the number of questions taken, we can quantify the number of exams taken, and we can even indicate the average percentage for exams. We're also able to establish which province, you know, from which province we have more interest, you know, in which topic. Like for instance, you know, the most visited topics in the Eastern Cape in life sciences, genetic and inheritance. Whereas in the Free State for life sciences is meiosis. So that tells that at least with a mobile app, we can tell on the progress. Now, following is print-based and teacher support material. These are the types of study guides that we have provided. And on the next slide, we further indicate what other study guides were prepared and their numbers. And take note, this includes, you know, provision for SASL as the 12 official language in this case. And then on the next slide, we also are now focusing on smaller enrollment subjects, you know, your music, visual arts, tourism, where you have fewer uptake. So these are the numbers that we focus now on them and providing support in the form of study guides. Now, the distribution of study guides, this is done digitally, you know, through the DPE and partners, and partners also including the provincial education departments. These are all posted, you know, on the websites of all the interested partners, as in you know, the websites provided there. On the next slide, the ICT support from the DBE. Next slide, Dr. Collier. These are, you know, the support measures that are provided for learners. The digital textbooks and resources, which can be accessed at any given moment, including free textbooks, study guides, and papers. This can be accessed offline and online. And these are the website addresses of the national and provincial departments from which this can be accessed. So this content is readily available and is made readily available so that learners can access that. The ICT equipment, you know, this is also getting ground with various provinces, for instance, providing tablets and laptops with preloaded content and connectivity. And then provinces like Free State providing two terabyte hard drives to 326 schools. So this tells that we're also making that connectivity, you know, not a stumbling block anymore, but we're making that accessible. On the next slide, we're looking at internet connectivity. Phase two of internet connectivity is looking at more than 18,000 public schools being connected by ICT telcos, so that those learners can have access to connectivity. And this is intended for the period April 2022 to March 2025. Then Telkom is also in the process of providing 1,200 schools, public schools, on its fiber footprint, which will enable connectivity to enhance teaching and learning. Then the next slide. LTM support, again provided by the DBE. We have Siyavula textbooks, which is a compilation of exercises, in maths, for maths and science. These are your free access, state-owned exercises or text that learners and provinces and every interested party, can use, can access. And we do indicate, how accessible they are and the number of active members and the active access and accessing of the textbooks we have recorded in each of the provinces. If you look at 2023, you realize that at least Gauteng is consistent in the numbers. There's been a huge drop actually in June, July, from 3 million preceding June, which would then suggest before exams, there was real access, especially to Gauteng, to this. Actually, in all the provinces, if you look at the numbers, except in Mpumalanga, maybe in the Northern Cape, there was more access, to the Siyavula text in May, obviously in preparation for the June exams. And that seems to have tapered down in July, which would be post-exams. Now, we look at encouraging continuous use of these state-owned textbooks. The next slide. The Mind Gap Study Guides. This is the frequency of use as we've been able to establish. Only that, as we said it, as a disclaimer, we can record on the number of clicks. The click in this case, referring to every time the study guide is accessed. But, as to the impact, at the moment, we're still not able to establish what the impact of those number of clicks would be, which is something that I'm sure we will need to look at, qualifying. Now, the next slides speak to the effectiveness of the quality of learner support classes. This is a result of, the visits that were conducted to all the nine provinces and, with, of course, a sample of centers that were visited. So as a background, provinces, as indicated, managed to organize and support programs for learners through autumn and winter vacation classes. And I have to report also, Honorable Chair, that the spring vacation classes were also conducted just last week, and that was also given attention. The results of the report thereof is not part of this presentation, as we're only consolidating the data now. Now, all the non-provincial education departments have been able to provide this program, as indicated, even in the individual provincial. All the provinces have been able to do that. And then now we have this as face-to-face, and the focus of all of these is face-to-face intervention. On the next slide, Without speaking to the findings about autumn support classes, and Chair, I will just mention, you know, one or two aspects, and then we will move on to the next one. Now, the majority of centres were walk-in centres. Now, walk-in centres are those centres in which learners just go like they go into school on a daily basis. They go start at 8 o'clock, and maybe around 3 o'clock the centre closes. But then residential centres are those that have boarding facilities in which learners are kept you know, longer or overnight. These are mainly your specialized camps, as I indicated at times, camps for, you know, lower candidates, or camps, you know, for high flyers. So, but the majority, you know, as may be seen, were walk-in centers. And the purpose of the classes, the majority of the centers were revised in term one, when we're talking autumn now. And then next, the next slide speaks about the criteria for selection of teachers. Since these were school-run, 47%, the majority of those centres actually employed teachers from their own schools. It's only those camps, specialised residential areas, rather camps, that had teachers which were recommended by district office or high performing teachers. And then next, Dr. Poirier, next slide. We look in the description of learners at the centres, the majority being walk-in centres. It means these were mainly learners from, you know, from the same school, or learners from just a clustering of schools in the circuit. And then there would be those specific at lower scale, as you can see, 13%, about 4.5%, focusing on progress learners or learners at the risk of failing. Shall I remind members that this is a shorter period as well, you know, of the holidays, about a week to about 7 days. So that's why, you know, there's no aggressive uptake. The number of days spread anything from 3 to 5 days, with, you know, mainly those residential camps spreading over maybe a maximum of 10 days, given, you know, the learners provided with residential facilities, as well as, you know, working during the weekend. The number of hours stretched from anything from 2 to 9 hours. And then the duration, we've talked about the duration. Attendance on the day of the visits. The day of the visits, we're referring to, this is an average of, you know, what attendance was, looking at how... found the majority were really at 90 and above. So we tell that attendance was satisfactory. There's very little, as you can see, 0.8, you know, that did not have much attendance recorded. And the next slide speaks to the teaching and learning resources. It's also pleasing to note that much as there's still that reliance on previous course payments, there's also use for resources that are provided by the DBE, the resource study guides, as well as provincial study guides. So this is quite a spread, at least of learning resources that are utilized at the centers. And this includes the Mind the Gap study guide, as indicated. On the next slide, the subjects offered, mainly your high enrollment subjects, you know, were receiving attention in this case. But it's also pleasing, Chair, to know that even your lower enrollment subjects are now gradually being accommodated in your current, you know, support measures. You know, your religion studies, as well as the hospitality information technology, much as they're still on a low scale, but at least they're now gradually beginning to get attention. And then the next slide, we get then to with school pro support classes, and if you could push to the next slide, again the purpose was mainly revision with an occasional catch up and curriculum coverage being cited. And then now you do realize also there's some centers that just focus on the underperforming learners, and left their top performing learners out, whereas others also made provision for their top performing learners. We have to indicate that in some very innovative ways, you would end up with a center that has both focus on underperforming group, underperforming learners and top performing learners, just catered differently, just so that, your top performing learners are pushed to the maximum and your underperforming learners as well are helped to, to feast on what's called the low hanging fruit, which would then enable them to get the mark that will enable them to succeed. On the next slide, we're looking at the criteria for selection of teachers. These mainly being resident. We had teachers that were from performing schools, and these were mainly selected by the province and were at district organized centers. But those that were school run, we had those schools or those centers utilizing their own teachers. The next slide. The learners at the centers, most of the time, it would be the learners at the school, if it's school-based. But then, in some instances where it's a cluster or where it's, a grouping, then you'd have learners from identified schools, and the specialized ones will focus on a conglomerate or a bunching up of moderate and progress learners, at the same center, whereas mainly your high flyers would have a separate camp that is held away from the rest of the learners. What I mean by that is you would have moderate and progress learners. The chances are you could get the moderate and progress learners at a center, but most of the time your high flyers are always on the district or provincially run centers away. And then the number of days, the majority of the centers ran for 10 days, with most contact time comprises 6 hours, and then 96, that was 6 centers ran between 4 to 5 days. So this is the variation, and this is also dependent on the availability of funds. Then we can see that quite a lesser percentage of the centers conducted lessons for 7 hours and 8 hours respectively. Again, these that go for longer hours, would be those that are able to provide residence and so on and so forth. On the next slide. On the next slide, we're looking at...
Sorry, Dr. Mjembu, if Mr. Munyaki can move towards concluding so that Dr. Pulia must have the opportunity to present part B, because the chair said by 1 o'clock they should be done.
Thank you very
much. If you could just expedite rounding off, please.
Thank you, DG. The actual attendance is indicated as was the case in the previous session. Most of the candidates were really attending satisfactorily. The next slide. The monitoring and support, the district and the provinces are really providing support and monitoring in this case. Then on the next slide, the teaching and learning resources in a similar manner as reported in the autumn, as was the case as well in the spring. We do have quite a variety of these study guides that are offered. And then something that is good news, I think, is that the languages are now beginning to really get attention. The languages are now included in many of these support measures. And then the non-languages subjects are mainly your high enrollment subjects, although it's, as I indicated, also exciting that some low enrollment subjects are also receiving attention. And that is a graphic presentation of the uptake, with the majority or the highest enrollment uptake being that of the high enrollment subjects. And then the technical subjects as well, we're also receiving attention. Okay, and then the selections of topics in a similar manner as was the case with the autumn. The common challenging topics are based on the subject improvement plans and diagnosis by the subject advisors and subject teachers, led to the topics that will be focused on. And the selection of topics, that's what we've talked about, the diagnostic reports utilized, as well as the provincial analysis. Most of the centers were found, 74% were found, to be fully functional and effective. Then at the next slide. We are not going to really focus mainly on in details on learner support, but the majority of the learners really found this helpful, and they confirmed the various focuses, the focus areas of the support provided, which included, amongst others, strengthening of what they needed, as well as how successful that was. And then the impact analysis of the support measure, though there were pre-tests and post-tests that were conducted, which resulted in most cases with the centers finding learners having improved in their post-tests. And then in the next slide, learners are pretty happy with the performance, rather with the support that's provided by the winter classes, and they find them very helpful. Then the issues that we had that were a bit worrisome, the issues of career choices, application to tertiary and financial assistance. We found learners might know what they want to do, but they might not have taken enough measures to ensure that they get to be what they want to be or where they want to be. And then this is just a summary of those findings as we have indicated. Then the best practices, we found the recruitment of best teachers in different subjects, and then supervision of studies in the evening, and the use of integration, as well as tracking learner attendance throughout the day through use of subject registers. We found this to be best practices that ensured that learners remained rooted and that things were, the intended objectives were reached. Then on the next slide. We found, learner motivation sessions. And more than anything, something that was very important for us was individualized and differentiated support classes. I think I have indicated about the differentiated camps. And then in conclusion, that'll be the next slide. This refers now to what's called the last push support plans. And as we indicated, these have already taken place, and these were concluded during the weekend in some provinces, whilst others ended up on Friday. Then these have been these spring support classes, in which learners were just being prepared for these final exams, which included, amongst others, analysis and follow up on learner performance in the prep exams that were written. And then in conclusion, which will be the next slide, Dr. Pauline, we will then look at the exam basis. But the important thing that we wanted to mention to members in conclusion is these were the measures that were taken to ensure that learners were really prepared for the examinations. We cited measures that were intended to strengthen all the challenges or to cover all the challenges, mediate all the challenges that learners could experienced in their challenges started as part of the introduction. I thank you, Chair.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Ntembu. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Select Committee, our DG, DDG present, and other members present this morning. What we've presented is learner readiness, and getting the exam system to be ready is equally important. In fact, Honourable Chair, we regard them as two sides of the same coin, so that we make sure that all these efforts over 13 years of teaching and learning are measured through an examination that is valid and reliable and credible. Just to indicate that with regard to the exam system, it has evolved over the years, and there's a significant level of maturity that we're observing in the examination system, although there are issues that we're attending to. Just to mention that we have two equal examination opportunities, one in May, June, one in October, and at any one time, we're basically managing the current exam, the previous, and the future, given the 18-month cycle that we need to manage. This is the model for effective administration of the exam, which has really held us together and sustained our processes. And we look at making sure that we have a clear standard, which is mediated, which is communicated across. Then we support and coordinate the different components from province to district to school. And based on the support and coordination, then comes the monitoring and evaluation to look at how effective is the implementation. And obviously what comes out of that monitoring and evaluation feeds back into the system. And on a continuous basis, while we're maintaining the good current practices, we are also enhancing and modernizing the system. Very quickly, Honorable Chair, this is the cycle, and which starts with the setting of question papers to the writing, marking, which are the critical process. And finally, every learner must be issued with these, his or her result together with a certificate. We offer full certificates. Anywhere a learner does not make the full qualification, a learner still receives a subject certificate of the subjects that he or she has passed. Very important, what is the size and scope of this exam? How does it compare to previous exam? And if you look at our numbers, Honorable Chairperson, from 2018 to 2023, numbers have increased by almost 100,000. So we are on 723,000, slightly down from last year. This is a graphical representation. So we are above the 700,000, and it would appear that that's where the system will remain over the next few years. This is our part-time candidates, and part-time candidates are those that would have written the exam from as far back as 2008, who for one reason or the other may not have satisfied all the requirements, and these are the learners that are supported, and write the examination. There's a slight drop, but these are not the final figures because part-time candidates wrote the May, June, and the registration is still being finalized, and we believe that our numbers will go up very much close to the 160,000. This is a breakdown in terms of the different provinces with regard to the full-time candidature. And if one looks at KwaZulu-Natal, which is our largest province, almost 25% of our candidates come from KwaZulu and Natal, and our smallest province being Northern Cape with 13,297. This gives you a graphical representation of the different provinces. And here we're looking at the part-time learners and giving you an indication of where the drops are. And here we're looking at the progress learners. Just to remind the meeting, progress learners are learners who would have failed grade 11, but if we had retained them in grade 11, they would then be spending more than 4 years in the FAPE, and that is contrary to policy, and therefore they are progressed into grade 12. And this year, the number is slightly up to 53,000, but in four of the provinces, or five of the provinces, we have dropped, and these numbers are always closely monitored. This is looking at the subject numbers, and because the overall numbers in terms of our full-time candidates have dropped, therefore we are seeing this particular drop across all subjects. We continue to monitor our key subjects like mathematics versus mathematical literacy. This is a graphical representation, Honorable Chairperson, of the numbers from 2022 into 2023. These are our technical subjects. We keep a very close eye on the technology subject. There's been an increase in a number of the specializations, but not to the extent that we'd like to see a greater and a higher uptake. And obviously, the ones where there's been a drop are the ones that we're also keeping a close eye, which we are promoting across the system so that next year we have an improved uptake. Now, Honorable Chair, we always criticize for the fact that our throughput is low. We have 1 million learners that enter grade one, but we have, you know, a smaller percentage making it to grade 12. And therefore, we now monitor, not just in grade 10, 11, and 12, but across the system. Now here, what we are showing, Honorable Chair, is that in grade 10, we had 974,000 grade 10 learners. 833,000, which means 85% of our learners made it from grade 10 into grade 11. And finally, 74% of our learners that were in grade 10 are in grade 12. So our throughput is improving, and we're doing the best we can to make sure that we retain learners, and where learners drop out, we also are in the process of tracking them to establish where they are and whether they get into the world of work or whether they enter our FET colleges, and that's the monitoring. This is just the graphical representation from grade 10, 11, and 12 across the nine provinces. Now moving on to the preparation, and I'll quickly go through each of the key components, but before that, this year we've come up, based on our experience from previous years, what are the non-negotiables? What is it that every province and every component of the system must comply with? And obviously security is uppermost. We found from previous years that one of the weak points in the security value chain is the printing side. And that we have done significant audits. In fact, for the first time this year, we've got the State Security Agency to do an audit of all our printing venues across all nine provinces. And they were able to expose some of the hidden risks that we were not able to pick up. And I'm not going to go through each one of them. We are also upping our monitoring coverage. Monitoring is so critical. As much as we have clear rules and regulations, roles and responsibilities, but we find that unless you monitor, you're never going to get the system to fully comply with what is required. Now, looking at each of the components and where we are, with regard to question papers, all 162 question papers have been set by expert subject panels. They've been approved by Uma Lucy, and they are now with our provincial departments, and they are being printed. We also set 18 non-official languages, and this has been outsourced to the IEB. Question papers are also adapted for Braille, for audio, for our deaf learners, and enlarged print. And we make sure that learners that encounter barriers to learning are accommodated as far as possible. With regard to printing, like I spoke about State Security Agency, we are confident that our printing, packing, and distribution sites meet the criteria. And where a site does not meet the criteria, particularly in terms of storage, they will not be allowed to house or store question papers. The WCED stores question papers at every school. It's the only province that does that. And we had to then make sure that every school satisfies the criteria of a storage point. And what we encouraged with the fact that the Western Cape has a smart locking mechanism whereby central in Cape Town, through an electronic coding system, the security band is opened across all centers by the press of a button in Cape Town. So this also enhances the security, given the fact that they store at a school. South African Sign Language, this is one of our pet projects, and 23 schools across all 9 provinces will be offering South African Sign Languages, South African Sign Language. 134 candidates have been registered, and here the question papers are video recorded, and each learner sits behind a laptop and the question paper is signed. The learner in turn responds by signing, and that gets recorded through a webcam, and that then gets transferred onto a disc and submitted to Pretoria, and it then gets marked by trained educators who work with the South African Sign Language. The writing of the exam will be written across 6,800 centers, 6,300 of them are public schools, and 552 are your independent schools that write the state examination. In terms of preparing for the writing, training of invigilators is one of our key priorities. And for this year, we are not allowing schools to train their own invigilators, but rather we have a core team from the district and the province that will take responsibility so that we don't have this cascading model. And through cascading, we find that the message gets diluted. Now, with the core team, we believe that our invigilators will get the information from the primary source, and that will make sure that they get the essence of what is being required. We've adapted our training manuals. We've included specific scenarios in specific settings so that our invigilators are fully trained and fully briefed in terms of how do they deal with this different situation that may occur in an examination room, but also to make sure that they strict compliance with all the rules and regulations. I spoke about accommodation, and we have different forms of accommodation, and learners are assessed, and one of the main approaches to accommodation is to give learners extra time where they may have a particular barrier. And with that extra time, we find that our learners are able to cope better. In some cases, you have a scribe where a learner is unable to write. You have a reader where a learner struggles to read. There are prompters. We make sure there are appropriate rest breaks to assist our learners. And even in this regard, we have pooled our scribes and readers. So there's uniformity, there's a common standard in terms of the implementation of scribing and reading by this group of individuals. Now, a concession is where a learner is granted an exemption or a deviation from policy. For example, a learner with dyscalculia, a learner that is struggling with math, will be exempted from mathematics. Obviously, this is based on sound professional evidence that's presented, which must be evaluated by our experts, and then the learner is granted exemption from mathematics, but he must take another subject in lieu of the mathematics. Moving on to the actual centers, our centers are categorized in terms of the risk profile. We have high-risk centers, medium-risk, and low-risk. Our high-risk centers, we as a department will take over the running of the exam, or we would place a resident monitor there for every center. Our medium-risk centers, we could either have a resident monitor, or we have what is referred to as a roving monitor, somebody that covers one or two centers. Low-risk centers, we normally have a roving monitor. So we know exactly what the risk profiles are based on previous experiences in terms of these particular centers. With regard to marking, which is possibly the most important aspect of this entire examination value chain, we firstly make sure that we appoint markers that know the content, that have the appropriate experience and qualification. The criteria are clearly spelled out in the policy document. We do an audit of a sample of markers across the provinces to make sure that the right markers are appointed. Obviously, this is all preceded by verification and control mechanisms that are put in place. We also bring on novice markers so that we use marking to also build capacity. A total of 53,926 markers will be brought together during the December period, and this is the breakdown across the nine provinces. And our marking centers have already been identified, they've been evaluated, and we have residential marking centers across all provinces except Gauteng. Because of the distances in Gauteng, markers travel in and out of the marking center. We have had previously problem, with water, electricity. We are strengthening our evaluation in terms of all of that to make sure that, particularly in the case of electricity, we've got backup generators at each of our centers. Where we think there may be water shedding, we also have alternative sources of water to make sure that nothing will interfere with the comfort and the conveniences of our markers during this particular marking process. We have a total of 190 marking centers, and this is the breakdown depending on the number of candidates and scripts per province. The DBE also has one marking center, and that one marking center is for your small subject with small numbers, where the capacity may not be present in the province. DBE then marks those papers centrally here in Pretoria. The marking standardization meetings, Honorable Chair, is a very important process because this is where we bring together chief markers, internal moderators from the nine provinces. They sit over a three-day period with the panel that set the question papers together with Umavisi moderator, And they go through the question paper, question by question, to make sure that the question was well formulated, but more importantly, to look at what are the kind of alternative responses that learners may present. And all of that gets captured so that no learner is disadvantaged by an alternative answer that may be correct, but is not in your marking guideline. That is then followed by training. And we train markers using live scripts. And it's interesting. We give all 20 of these markers the same script to mark. And then we look at what are the discrepancies that arise from 20 of them marking the same script and find out what is the reason for the discrepancy. And after having gone through three or four scripts, we find that all markers are able to reach a common point of convergence in terms of the marking. But we still allow for what we refer to as a tolerance range, and we have a tolerance range per question and for the complete paper. Now, the tolerance range is very important because markers can't deviate, and during our moderation process, we make sure that tolerance ranges are adhered to. We also have what we refer to as an authorization process. After having been trained, markers are given scripts to mark, and they must comply with the tolerance range at question level as well as at the holistic question paper level. And if after providing them with repeated number of scripts, they fail to comply, they are not authorized. And as a result, they will not be involved in this process. These are some of the other quality assurance measures that we have in place for marking. We have moderation by senior marker, by deputy chief marker, and an internal moderator. And very important, every group of five markers is supervised by a senior marker. So we can then guarantee the quality that is carried out by those five markers and the tolerance range which I indicated. And also to indicate that we monitor every marking center. Our DG prioritizes monitoring of the marking centers, and he has in previous years, and I'm sure he's going to do that this year as well, is make sure that he covers all 190 marking centers in that two-week period that marking takes place. Then comes this important process. We have about 14 million marks that must be accurately captured, and we make sure that accurate capture takes place through double capture. So it simply means that every mark that gets captured on our examination computer system is captured twice by a second data capturer. And if there's a discrepancy between the first and second capture, the system immediately picks it up, and that gets checked. Our marking capture centers are in place. We've appointed data capturers, and they have been trained, and we're ready for the data capture. Like I indicated, monitoring is very important. And when we talk about monitoring, as much as the writing and the marking are the most important, but we monitor this examination cycle from beginning to the end through various initiatives which are listed here under B. But during the actual writing, we then deploy monitors, part-time monitors that have been trained, and they make sure that what happens at a writing center and as a marking center is compliant with the rules and regulation. This slide talks about the audit of storage points, and every storage point is audited to make sure they comply with the mandatory criteria. And where they don't comply, they will not be allowed to store question papers. This is the monitoring. This year and last year, we've set a monitoring target of 70% across the board, and we make sure that all our provinces, in other words, for every session, at least 70% of the centers must be monitored. And this allows us to present to the South African public confidence that our exams have been conducted. Now, in terms of the irregularities, now, I know that we've had irregularities over the last few years. We certainly have gone through each one of them, looked at what caused those irregularities, and put in contingency plans, alternative mechanisms to make sure that these irregularities do not occur. And we have what is referred to as a commitment agreement, where every parent and learner will commit in writing that they will comply with the rules and regulation. We also have a hotline that will be operating during the writing period 24/7, and we then pick up whatever information that will be necessary and which needs to be followed up. A week before the writing starts, we have a pledge signing ceremony, and for this year, the pledge signing is also going to be taken by teachers, because we believe that our teachers and officials must also pledge to a credible and an examination of integrity. An examination is managed by making sure you identify the risk and have plans in place to mitigate the risk. And I'm not going to go through all of the risks, but these are the risks that we've identified and we have clear plans in place. And in conclusion, Honorable Chair, this is our final dashboard, where we look at each component of the exam and look at what is our state of readiness. We still have a few amber. For example, staff capacity is one that we are working with, but we can indicate that our critical posts have all been filled. But you'll find that most of them are green. Where there's still an amber, it simply means that we are still in progress, but all of the ambers will certainly change to green before the examination commences. And in conclusion, these are the critical dates. On the 19th of January, every learner will receive his or her results from the school. Our minister will make the official announcement on the 18th of January 2024, and we will publish the results in the newspaper as per agreement with the regulator. My apologies, Honorable Chair and members, for the very long presentation, but we felt that we need to do justice to this very important matter relating the 2023 NSC examinations. Thank you very much for your indulgence.
Thank you, Dr. Polia, and thank you, Chair. Can we hand over to the Chair, the Honorable Chair?
Thanks to the two doctors, and thanks to DG. Honourable members, that's the presentation from the Department of Basic Education. I'll say thanks for this presentation. It has actually opened my eyes to see that the management of the department is ever improving ways of deepening and broadening the theater of education and learning by use and integration of ICT into the systems. We have the OZA matrix on Tube and the 12L1. These are amazing tools that our children can use to improve themselves. And that we are able to reach children that we may not be able to reach. We may not be able to be reached by experts. They can reach them through the Swelo Pele and OZA Matrix YouTube programs. Well, members, that's the presentation. I just want to check, for me, the most important thing for now, this presentation is clear. It shows what to do every year and the improvements and towards writing and preparing for examinations, the printing, including the corrections at the examination centers and the correction centers, all those. I just want to check for me whenever question papers leak, it really breaks my heart, because then it means even those kids who have been studying so hard for many years get discouraged by hearing that others have access to question papers before they are even, you know, given to them. In your presentation, you talked about auditing the, you know, using the state security agencies to audit the printing site. These are very important sites because that is where our papers are printed, the examination papers are printed. I'm told that from this report that 7 were audited and 2 were outstanding, possibly to be audited by late September. You know, and that is the Free State and Northwest. What were the outcomes of the audit of both provinces, the Northwest and the Free State? Honourable members, that's our chance to engage with the presentations, and I'll be happy if we knock off at exactly 20 past 12, so that we take the 12:30 bus. There's a sitting in the National Council of Provinces at 2 o'clock. Over to you, honourable members. Monitoring the system to check. Oh, there's Itumeleng Dube. Your hand is up, followed by Honorable Christian. Yeah, in that order. Honorable Dube.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me welcome the quite detailed and very insightful presentation done by the department chair. I think on the first question, Chair, you have covered me in relation to the auditing, the outstanding audit sites, Northwest and Free State. So I just wanted to check, Chair, just to add on that question, that maybe what was the delay for auditing? Can we, if the department can just touch on it? And then the second part is that has the auditing been done, because we are in October now, it's the 11th of October, so I would assume if the auditing was done, they should have included it in the report. So I just want to check, if it's not done by now, what are the delays? Even then, what were the delays for you to audit 7 sites out of 9? Thanks, Chair. The second question, Chair, I just want to check in terms of the report. How is the attendance of learners in the intervention support made by teachers, be it winter classes or autumn classes? Are they attending in their numbers? That is the second one, Chairperson. And then the third one, Chair, it has to do with slide. It's on slide 114. It states that 72% of the learners do not apply for financial assistance for entering to tertiary sector because the NSFAS system usually opens late around the year. So my question, Chair, is that, so why is it that we do not have a coordinated strategy between the GB and NSFAS so that we kind of have a synergy approach to get students, to get learners rather, to be able to receive financial assistance that will allow them to enter into the, say, tertiary sector. The last one, Chair, is on slide. I'm covered, Chair. I had already touched on the first one. No, I'm very covered, Chair. Thank you very much. Chairperson?
I'm not sure if the chairperson has dropped off, but I think let me continue with my questions in order to save time. It's Honorable Christian speaking.
Honorable Christian, yeah, you're good.
So,
okay.
So is it
thank
just
you,
a little heat up?
Thanks, Chairperson. The first question is about the teacher interventions and support in the Northern Cape. Now, I see in the presentation it was noted that there is no report or slide on teacher intervention and support for the Northern Cape, unlike all the other provinces. Now, could the department please provide an explanation for the exclusion of the Northern Cape in this particular report? And then, you know, just a question with regard to the consequence management then of low teacher participation. And in cases where low percentage of targeted teachers have participated in teacher interventions and support programs, could you clarify the consequence management procedures applied by the Department of Education to address this issue and ensure teacher engagement, especially then in the Northern Cape that has not reported anything? And then with regard to the study guides, I just want to determine how the study guides were developed and who were the key partners. How do they complement the prescribed textbooks? And additionally, how do you ensure that the deep rural areas access or print the physical copies of the study guides, especially in terms of internet connectivity, and then, of course, as I said, with regards to access, actually getting printed copies out to them. Then I see this department have mentioned something about a WhatsApp line. I would just like the department to provide a few examples for us so that we can get a better understanding of the WhatsApp line. So can the department provide a few examples of how the communication and information sharing process via the WhatsApp line unfolds? In other words, from the initial contact that the student makes or whoever is accessing the WhatsApp line to the actual resolution of the learner's inquiry. Can you provide us an example of that, the timeline, how effective it is, etc.? And then there was also mention made of non-functional centers. Now, the report said that there were 0.5% of non-functional centers. Now, where are these centers actually located is my first question. How are learners who are attending these non-functional or mostly functional centers being supported then? And then can the department also just explain the monitoring plan for the non-functional or mostly functional centers during the spring classes? And then with regard to the trained scribes and readers, could the department provide us a breakdown? And if they can't do it now, could they send the select committee a breakdown by province of the central pool of trained scribes and readers that was recently out by the DBE? And how often are these individuals verified, especially for their suitability to work with minors? Because obviously if they are registered with SAFE, that's a different thing, but if not, how are they verified in their suitability then to work with minors? And then lastly, Chairperson, is just a question on the signing of the pledge ceremony. We would have just liked a little bit more information on the pledge ceremony. What are the formal arrangements related to the school ceremony? And obviously, would it be possible for the committee members to attend such ceremonies in their respective provinces? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Christians. Are there members who want to ask questions before?
Yes, Chair, I did raise my hand. It's Baha.
Oh, Honorable Baha, yes, no. Sure, I didn't see your hand, no.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, it's just three questions from my side. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation. And I appreciate the fact that the department always comes through to share what their plans are, their programs at all given time. But Chair, my first question is, in conducting a final state of readiness visit from September to October, can you please be provided with an update on the final state of readiness from noted visits to all PEDs? And the second one, Chair, can we get an update on the outcomes of the audit of high-risk centers? And linked to that, Chair, on the printing sites, 7 of the 9 provinces' printing sites have been audited, working closely with the state security agency. What is the update on 2 provinces, which is the Northwest and the Free State? Chair, that's all from my side. But thank you for the presentation and thank you, Chair.
Another member wants to take a bite. No, DG, let's give you the reason to respond to some and answer some of the questions.
Hello, Chair.
Hi, DG, yeah.
I hope you can hear me, Chair.
Yes, we can. You're loud and clear.
I'm going to request Dr. Mtembu and Dr. Polia and Mr. Munyaki to offer responses. If you allow me, I'll just come in right at the end. Is that fine, Chair?
Doctors. Yes, the two doctors. You're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will start with Dr. Polia, who was presenting on the administrative state of readiness. And after Dr. Polia, I will allow Mr. Munyagi and Dr. Smelane to take us through the questions regarding the academic readiness of the system for the 2023 NSC exam. Over to you, Dr. Polia.
Thank you, Dr. Ntembu, and let me thank the honorable members of the committee for your questions. I think every time a question is asked, it helps us to go back and look at our systems again and make sure that we've really taken care of the issues that you are raising. So we look at every question as being an important point of intervention and improvement. Honorable Chair, you're absolutely correct. I mean, that's basically our greatest nightmare is a leakage of a question paper. And I think that which drives us from the beginning of the cycle to the end of the examination is a focus on making sure that these question papers do not leak. But we've come to realize over the year, Honorable Chairperson, that the human element, as much as we have trust and confidence in our officials, but at some point, the human factor may let us down. And we're doing our best to make sure that this human factor is controlled to the extent that it can. I think the other point, just to clarify, Honorable Chair, that in the last 2 years, 2021 and 2022, we did not have a leakage of a question paper. We had a leakage in 2020, and that was during the COVID year. But in 2022, which was last year, what we had was referred to as group copies, where teachers and other adults assisted learners. And what happened there was that when the question paper is opened in the exam room, one question paper is then sent to a teacher to work out the answers. And the answers are then shared with learners via cell phone. So that was not a leakage per se. In 2021, what had happened in one case is where a question paper, while it was being distributed from the distribution point, while it was being taken to the writing center by the school principal, the security envelope was open, one question paper was taken out and then given to a teacher to work out the answers. So we refer to that as prior access, and technically it's not a leaked question paper, which happens, you know, the day before. But nonetheless, any kind of access to a question paper before the writing is for us a cardinal sin, a cardinal error, and we're doing our best. And like you said, Chair, we're doing audits. We are aware and we have a record of every individual that handles the question paper. We have this commitment agreement. We have the pledge signing. We have the hotline. So we're hoping that all of this, together with the advocacy that our communicator has embarked on and will continue to promote in the days that lead up to the exam, all of this will instill in our learners this important value of being able to write an exam honestly. And if they get any information, to share that with their school principals immediately. In terms of the audit of our printing points, you correctly indicated, Honorable Chair, as well as Honorable Bara, that seven of them were audited a few months ago. But in the case of Northwest and Free State, there was a delay. But Free State has been done. And Northwest, there was a further delay because Northwest has moved its printing operations. Northwest used to print at government printers, but now they've set up their own internal printing machinery in the province, and they needed more time. So we have now set the date of the 17th of October when State Security will do the audit of the Northwest, which is the only outstanding one. But let me indicate that before printing starts at any of these centers, DBE does a thorough audit, and we have to give them a clearance before they start with printing. So in the case of Northwest, they started with the printing based on our own internal audit, and we are convinced that they comply with all the security measures. But obviously, the external eye from State Security will assist in making sure that those areas that we may have missed out are also covered. In the case of Honorable Christian, in terms of the breakdown of scribes and readers, we'll certainly make that available to the committee. And I think you're raising a very important point about the suitability of these individuals to work with minors. And we will certainly look at that more closely. And all of these persons that are involved, they are firstly qualified to accomplish the task. Secondly, they come based on recommendations from the school. And only after a screening process do they then get added onto our database. But I think what you're asking us to do is to add this particular element and get some kind of clearance. But let me also indicate that a scribe or a reader is not alone in a room with this particular candidate. We still have an invigilator present. That is a given requirement because we also need to make sure that our scribes and readers carry out their task as required. And if we are suspecting anything untoward, I think the invigilator, who is an official of the department or an educator, is there to keep a close eye and make sure that our learner is protected at all times. With regard to the pledge signing, we would welcome support from members of the select committee. I think your presence at these pledge signing ceremonies will just add value and give it that kind of clout and status that it requires. The pledge signing has been set down for the 20th of October. It's the week before the exam starts. The exam starts officially on the 30th. And At the orientation session, there's a special orientation session that schools normally have for all the grade 12 learners, and that then coincides with the pledge sign. It's an official ceremony conducted by the school principal, and we've provided our schools with clear guidelines in terms of how the pledge signing ceremony will be conducted. So we advise members of the committee to identify a school that you would like to be part of, and we could arrange for members to participate in the pledge signing. Our minister, our deputy minister, our director general, and other senior officials will also be present at the different pledge signing ceremonies. So it is a major event, and we think it sets the tone for the commencement of this important examination. Honorable Bara, the state of readiness, in fact, I personally was in Mpumalanga yesterday, and we have a very extensive state of readiness. What we do is we send out a self-evaluation instrument, and every province then responds to the questions based on the self-evaluation instrument. We also have an evaluation of every district and looking at the readiness of the district. So before we engage with the province with regard to their state of readiness, we focused on a virtual meeting where the province had to submit their report on the readiness of every district in the province on its level of readiness. That was a virtual meeting. Thereafter, we have a two-day face-to-face engagement with the province, and we go through the self-evaluation instrument, question by question, and the province is then expected to present evidence that they are ready with regard to every component. And we are completing today the last province, which is Free State, and we will then be able to finalize the final state of readiness. But I can say that all our provinces are ready to administer the exam. There are one or two provinces where there are specific issues, and our Director General has been informed of some of the issues, and our DG is dealing with them directly. But we are making a commitment that before the exam commences, all of those outstanding issues will be dealt with. A report on the IRIS centers. IRIS centers are normally centers where there may have been an irregularity in previous years. And if you've had an irregularity, you are regarded as a IRIS center. If you're having matrix for the first time, you are regarded as a IRIS center. If you are an independent school, we regard you as a IRIS, but there are some of our independent schools that have really proven their mettle, and we allow them to conduct the exam. But generally, IRIS centers...
In conclusion, Dr. Bullier.
Yeah, my apologies, DG, I'm there. Yeah, I think I want to say that independent schools, we looked at them very closely, and if we think there's a risk, we then deal with them. That's the end. Thank you, DG.
Thanks, Dr. Polia. I will call upon Dr. Melane and Mr. Munyal to take us through, but I just want to say, Chair, that there's another risk that we always deal with every year, that one of community protests, where people take advantage of the exam season and begin to start getting into the streets, blocking the roads and so on. That was just by the way. Over to you, Dr. Smelane and Munyaki.
Thank you, DJ. If you allow me, Dr. Smelane.
Just 4 minutes, each one of them. They could respond in 4 minutes so that we... Yeah.
Okay, I'll just quickly respond to the few questions that I picked up here. The first question was specifically on attendance. I think in the presentations we've made for both
the autumn as well as the winter, we indicated that at least more than 70%, actually approximately 77% is what the slide read, of the centers registered, between 80 to 100%. So the attendance is good. And this applies to learners, that's where we got that data from, as well as, attendance of teachers. And that we get from the attendance registers of teachers as well. And then there was an issue about the Northern Cape support measures for teachers. Shall we humbly indicate to the committee that the presentations on a provincial input is based on their submission of the media EBR, evidence-based reporting. So the evidence-based reporting, requires a minimum of 20% impact of the entire intended audience. In other words, if the support measure is rolled out, it should have an impact on a minimum of 20%, of the entire population of the target audience. So the Northern Cape fell short, in many of the support measures. That's why I think their support measure for teachers was not necessarily captured in this case. And then the issue of study guides. The study guides are study guide development. They are developed by a team comprising subject specialists from the Department of Basic Education, from the province, the district, and teachers in this following project. The subject experts have a sit-down and writing session, and then once the draft has been made available at the first session, then that is made available for public comment from a number of teachers and practitioners. And then the subsequent session then looks to consolidate the input so that the study guide involves input from the practitioners as well. So on the basis of that, then the study guides are quality assured, and then once approved, then they're made available. Now, when the funds are available, when these funds were still available, these were made, in hard print, in printed copies to all the provinces. But, the constraints, financial constraints, what happens then is, these are only made for provinces as a soft copy, and then they're uploaded on the website, on the departmental website. So provinces then target their rural areas, and then they print for those, or for those centres that need support. And those are the direct questions, Chair, that I picked up, and I stand advised if there are any other that I left out.
Thank you, Mr. Munyaki. Can I hand over to the DG so that you then take the last bite of the question session?
Thank you, Dr. Mtembu, Dr. Polia, Mr. Munyaki. Thank you, Chair, for your understanding. And thank you, honorable members, for questions that are quite relevant to what we are presenting. Just a few comments to what colleagues have responded to. We've tried to up our security, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, regarding the security of papers, but our weakness will always be the human element, because Sorry, Chair, I got distracted. Can you still hear me? Chairperson, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you, Honorable Christian. I'm saying we're trying to do what is humanly possible, and we've done that. The state security is part of our operations now in terms of ensuring the security of papers, and we are happy about that. But as it always would be the case, where the human element is involved, there are always limitations. The issue, Honorable Christian, of attendance has been well explained by Mr. Munyaki. I've recently been in the Northern Cape. I've been to Pix Lika Seme. I've been to DR and a few other areas there where camps were held. Teachers were there, and they came in their numbers. It might just be that the Northern Cape did not make this information available when it was required. But I've also met with all the districts in the Northern Cape. They have a very comprehensive teacher development program, and teachers are attending, and even in their camps, learners do attend. So we expect to, where teachers do not attend and they are expected to attend, we expect provinces to ensure that there are consequences for that. Otherwise, honorable members, I really want to thank you and then confirm that our state of readiness has evolved in many ways. Exams as a line function do their state of readiness. Curriculum through the evidence-based report do the state of readiness. I do the state of readiness by going to districts, but in addition to that, we meet with individual provinces to confirm what comes from land functions. That's how involved this process is. And I can confirm, I have spoken to learners up to even this past weekend in Gauteng, in Free State, virtually in all provinces. And learners have told me that they can't wait to write their exams, and they are ready. And they've assured me that they are going to give it their best to make sure that they reciprocate the efforts that we are making. Thank you very much for inviting us and affording us the opportunity to come and bring the select committee up to speed about our state of readiness. Thank you, honorable members and honorable chair.
Thank you, DG. Thank you very much for this
very good report. Detailed. Thank you. We're supposed to continue with this meeting and deal with other committee matters related to basic education. I'll move that part of the meeting to the next time that we meet. We'll call a meeting to do that. Thank you, DG. This meeting is adjourned. Members, let's rush to our 12:30 meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you, colleagues.
You rush to the meetings now.